Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
Hello.
Hello.
It's so pretty outside.
It is so gorgeous.
Did you have a good day yesterday? Yesterday was beautiful too.
Yeah, it was warm. A lot of the day in a hospital. So
That was a boneheaded question on my part.
Yeah,
I knew where you were yesterday.
I did go out for a walk regularly. Yeah. I don't like sitting for long periods of time. So
no.
Yeah. Especially when you're just sort of like stuck there.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, we were at my kids' track meet all day, and it was glorious, because usually the beginning of the track meet season is rainy and cold.
Uh-huh.
And so we're usually...
It's almost hot.
Yeah, so and yesterday it was hot, but we had like a sunshade tent and our chairs set up, and we felt very... like
those are the best investments.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, it's so funny. We were telling the people that we were sitting with, I don't know why it took me so long to invest in a sunshade.
Yeah.
I mean, we were baking out in the sun for like years before we figured out it might be worth getting one of those.
Yeah.
And now I don't know how I ever... lived before. Yeah. Especially for track meets, because track meets are like 8 hours long.
They're so long. Yeah.
So yeah, the weather is absolutely beautiful.
I feel like I always thought of myself as, if my kids start getting into a lot of outdoor sports, I would be that person. I don't like changes in elements. Like, I like little, you know, like a cool spring day or like a really hot, you know, but if it's like rainy outside or windy and miserable or snowy, I don't like that. And so I envisioned myself being in one of those little pod chairs.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm like, I'm blocked from all the elements.
And maybe you have like a little space heater in there.
Yeah.
I mean, it does get to the point
they do have chairs now with heaters in them.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Like seat warmers?
Like seat warmers.
Oh.
I mean, I'm sure they're expensive, but
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I mean, I always feel a little bit of guilt, not really, when I'm watching my kids like at track practice from the warmth of my car.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm sitting in the seat with the seat warmers and they're out there just, you know, freezing their little buns off. It's okay.
You had your day.
It's good for them.
Yeah.
It's resilience.
Yeah.
All right. Well, today we're talking, this is like our new series, Preventing Recurrence.
Yeah.
I don't know if preventing recurrence is, I want to say preventing recurrence or slowing disease progression for those living with cancer already.
Yeah. Because if you focus just on cancer, I feel like you're missing sort of the whole picture of all the good health things that you're doing for yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, so even if you're living with cancer, you need to be doing things to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make sure that your disease doesn't progress.
Or if you're listening to this and you've never had cancer, how about you just prevent disease?
Prevent disease.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all, I don't know a single survivor that doesn't look back and say, I wish I wouldn't have known.
Wouldn't have known?
I wish I would have known.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't think that you're susceptible to cancer in your 30s.
I think though, once you are a survivor or you've had some kind of diagnosis, I think your why becomes a little bit adjusted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to tell my kids the other day, and of course their eyes glazed over, but I'm like, guys, I'm like, what you eat right now impacts how your health is in your 20s. What you eat in your 20s impacts your health in your 40s. What you eat in your 40s impacts your health in your 60s. I'm like, get the picture. And they're just like, they can't see the forest through the trees. Yeah. They don't care.
That's that prefrontal lobe not fully developed.
I know. But I mean, I feel like there's a lot of adults walking around with, you know, underdeveloped prefrontal cortexes too.
Well, that's true.
We all struggle with this.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, so we're going to talk a little bit about preventing recurrence or disease progression. We're going to talk about what a cancer recurrence means.
And then we're going to talk about what we all know about preventing recurrence, you know, sort of the things that we've put into our own lifestyles, and then why it can be hard to make those changes.
Oh,
it is a struggle.
It's such a struggle. Finally, we're going to talk about our intention with this new series. But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor. Ann's Bra Shop features skilled mastectomy fitters ready to assist you in selecting the perfect breast forms, bras, swimsuits, and camisoles for your post-surgery needs. They have 3 locations in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield in Wentzville, Missouri, across the river in O'Fallon, Illinois, and a 4th location south on I-55 in Cape Girardeau. Visit Ann's Bra Shop at www.brashop.com to learn more. All right, we're back. Okay, so we have to kind of do the little education piece, right? For all those listening about what does recurrence mean? Because it can be a local recurrence, a regional recurrence, or a distant recurrence.
Yep. So a local recurrence would be like in the same place. So if you had breast cancer before, and if it comes back, like say you had a lumpectomy and then you get another recurrence in the same place. And that doesn't mean that only lumpectomies get a local recurrence. You can still have a local recurrence with a mastectomy too.
Yeah, if they leave, not know.
Yeah, if they leave any breast tissue behind, and sometimes that breast tissue sort of wraps around to like underneath the armpit. So they, you know, there's always a chance they
left. Or if you didn't get enough margin, like for me, they didn't get enough margin at my chest wall, which makes me very prone to recurrence.
Yep.
So that's a local recurrence. Regional is like close to the same place, but maybe it goes to your lymph nodes again. Mm-hmm. And then distance is stage 4 metastatic. That is basically where there is cancer in other parts of your body. The goal at that point is to basically
manage symptoms.
Manage symptoms, prolong survival. And that is, you know, what we're going to be talking about.
Yep.
So what factors can impact recurrence? I feel like this more applies like on the medical science side of things. Like when they're looking at you, it's your cancer stage, obviously, and the type. Mm-hmm. There's different types of cancer. Triple negative, HER2 tended to be the more aggressive types of breast cancer, although now we have really good HER2 medications. So that I think has changed drastically. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was interesting, because I'm an estrogen positive breast cancer, is that even though our risk of recurrence is lower immediately following treatment, and it might be higher for triple negative or HER2 patients, there's more recurrence in later years for estrogen positive cancers.
Which, yeah, because those hormones are constantly changing.
You think that's what it is?
Well, and as you get older, like your estrogen falls off, you start slipping, you know, depending on where you are in menopause based on the treatment, the treatment you had after your treatment, you know, those hormones change again. Mm-hmm. And if you fluctuate back into a, you know, that unhealthy pathway for your estrogen processing in your body, then.
Yeah. Then it can happen, you know, years later, 20 plus years later, it can happen. So cancer stage and type, tumor characteristics, you know, the tumor size, lymph node involvement, the presence of certain biomarkers, like if you are, you know, HER2 positive or ER positive, can impact recurrence. Margins, I talked about that a little bit.
Yeah,
like a lot of people have it in the chest wall. And it's basically like if cancer cells are found at the edges of the removed tissue, then they'll say you have positive margins. They want to have a clear set of margins. And like for me, I got the news that, oh, we didn't get enough margin. So that can be really...
It can be hard because sometimes you go back under the knife like just weeks after...
They gave me two choices. They said, well, we can go back in and surgically remove more, but they said that will delay the start of chemo and you'll have to do the drains all over again. And it's like the whole process. Or we can just get it with radiation, which I was like, I mean, it didn't feel like a guarantee, right? Yeah. Like going in and carving it out felt like more of a guarantee to me. Although I eventually decided to just do radiation and get it then. I wasn't prepared to go back under the knife. And that's a personal decision. But that's usually the treatment that they offer you when that happens.
Yep.
Treatment received. So, I mean, some people respond really well to surgery or chemo or radiation or hormone therapy. And so, you know, adherence to medications can prolong everything. Patient factors, your age.
So.
Now, wouldn't you think that if you're diagnosed younger, that you would have a greater opportunity for survival because you're young, you're fairly healthy? It's not.
Yeah.
Younger patients are more at risk for a recurrence and disease progression.
Yeah. Well, that's because, I mean, my guess is that you've got the impacts of those treatments. You know, like here I am 6 years out and I'm still sort of feeling the impacts of the chemo that I'm rebuilding life back. And, you know, you knock down your immune system like that hard at a younger age, it takes longer to rebuild back up. And then in that time, you've got like all the environmental factors and everything else coming in. And not only that, but when you're younger, I feel like your stress is higher. You got potentially got young kids. There's work stresses and everything. So,
I don't know what they attribute that to, like why younger patients are more likely to die than older patients. Yeah. I guess just because we have longer to make it.
Yeah.
You know,
and more likelihood of contracting another cancer.
Yeah.
Contracting. Yeah. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah.
Developing. There we go.
Developing another cancer. Yeah. I mean, you're right. The quality of life and the risk of developing another cancer once you've kind of
had one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's pretty high. Lifestyle factors. I mean, we cannot get around this, people.
Yeah.
I mean, we cannot get around this. If you were living the same way that you were living before you got cancer, it's not good.
Yeah.
You can't do it. You cannot do it. We're probably, I mean, wouldn't you imagine we're going to dive into this in some way?
I mean, I feel like a lot of what we're going to be talking about within this series is going to be the lifestyle factors. And I mean, and it's not going to be, it's not going to be everything that we talk about. A lot of it is going to be the emotional side and like the mental side. But yeah, there's so much about.
I just feel like we're doing people such a disservice by pretending like it's not a responsibility that we have to address.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm really annoyed with doctors.
For not bringing this up?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I get it because patients are traumatized and they're not, their brains aren't 100% online and they are hyper focused on just, okay, this is what we have to do right this second, the immediate treatment, right?
I mean, I sort of do, not to sympathize with the doctors, but I get it. Like,
I don't get it.
Oh, no. You don't get it?
I don't get it.
Oh, I get it because there's so much to unpack there that it's almost like the medical, well, it's not almost like the medical system that we have right now is not built for unpacking the amount of things that are involved in lifestyle that need to be unpacked.
That's
in
your coaching. Your coaching stripes are showing. You are like,
oh no.
We need to dive in and find out why you behave the way you behave, and you can't accomplish that in a 20-minute session.
No.
You know what you can accomplish?
You can give one tip.
No, you look at a patient. You say, "It freaking blows. I'm so sorry this happened to you, but now you have to operate as a diabetic alcoholic."
Yeah.
Like, that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
And that's what you can control.
Yeah.
And guess what? It's going to make a huge difference in your recovery.
Yes.
Why don't they do it?
I don't know.
It's a miss.
It is a miss.
It's a miss. Do you, before we jump into why we don't make changes after a diagnosis, do you want to do Boobs in the News?
Of course.
Okay. Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News.
All right, here's the title of this one. Overdue book returned to Colorado Library after how many years, do you want to guess?
Oh my gosh, 2 decades.
105 years.
What? That library, don't forgot about that book.
A Colorado library said a book was recently returned to the facility after being due back 105 years earlier.
The fact that they even had record of that book.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of impressed. It was a copy of Ivanhoe by Sir Walter Scott. It had been due back at the Fort Collins Public Library and Free Reading Room on February 13th, 1919.
Wow.
The book was returned to the library system by a woman who reported that her brother had found it among their mother's possessions in Kansas. The library said the book would have accrued about, do you want to guess how much in library fees?
Like $5,000.
It actually wasn't that much.
Oh, really?
$760.
Oh, wow.
In late fees.
Yeah, but I would think they would take into account the worth of the book at that point.
Well, they operated under the 1919 rate of 2 cents per day.
Oh, my goodness.
But it says the library eliminated late fines in 2020. They got rid of fines?
Really?
How do you encourage somebody to bring a book back?
I don't know.
I feel a lot of pressure when I...
But maybe that's just Colorado.
That sounds like something Colorado would do.
Yeah, all those people forgetting to bring their books back.
They're like, it's okay.
Oh, too many gummies.
It's okay that, it's okay that you don't want to be responsible.
Yeah.
We applaud you.
I do. I like think this every time I buy a book that I need to utilize the library more. I do utilize the library audiobooks though. So.
Well, I mean, now you can use the Libby app.
Yeah, it's the best.
I mean, my niece, I think I said this maybe in a previous episode, but my niece is a voracious reader and I just showed her Libby and her whole life has changed.
She's like, hasn't emerged from her room in days.
No. I mean, I very rarely walk into a library. I was actually at the library to do a little research. That
you read a lot of books, too.
I do. And you'd be proud of me. I'm reading a book right now for pure fun. I know. I never do that.
What?
I know. And now you're going to ask me what it is, and I can't remember. But it's about...
Clearly, it's making a big
impact. It's about one of the women doctors that helped find a solution for polio.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's actually very
good.
Did
you ever read Henrietta Lacks?
Mm-mm.
It's like this incredibly sad story of Henrietta Lacks or something like that. But she was like really, it's a sad story, but also like really interesting and good. So
you should
read that. That is a book up here. It's like a story, but it's a real story.
That's what
about
this is.
Medical system.
That's what this is. Yeah. It's kind
of course you are not finding something that's like smutty like I
would. Oh, no. I mean, I get bored. Like when I try to read smutty stuff or like really brainless stuff, I'm just like, oh, please. Like, I get so annoyed. I'm like, in what world does that happen?
I'm so engrossed in it. I, like, can't stop.
I know.
I'm almost done with that dang A Court of Thorns and Roses series. And my life, I think I'm going to cry when I'm done with it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's
your boobs. We're all boobs.
We're all boobs. There you go.
Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News. Boobs in the News.
I want to talk about... why we all know the things that prevent recurrence in terms of lifestyle, right? We know you know, whole foods, not smoking, not drinking, exercise, exercise and mental health, right? Like addressing emotional traumas and your stressors in life. I cannot say enough that I think that those are the keys to staying well.
Yeah.
We all know it.
Yeah.
And yet it's really difficult for us to make changes even after a catastrophic diagnosis.
Yeah.
And the question is, why? And I have a theory about that. It's the basis for Faith Through Fire.
Yeah.
It's trauma.
Yeah.
And it may not be like your trauma from prior to your diagnosis. We see that.
Yeah. But it could be the trauma of diagnosis.
The trauma of diagnosis. And I've said this before that I didn't start getting serious about my health until like 6 years post-diagnosis.
Okay.
You know, like it's been like you've seen me progress over the last 2 years. Like 2 years, I've started to really progress. But it took me 6 years to get out
and
of
it. And even before then, you were a little bit like, I don't know.
I know.
You were oppositely medical skeptical.
I really, really, really was one of those patients. And we run into these patients all the time now. And I kind of just smile and nod. But we run into those patients all the time that's like, I mean, if my doctor says so, it must be true.
Right.
And I have definitely detoured from that.
And it's not that I don't think that this is not here to be like,
don't listen to your doctor.
Don't listen to your doctor. I definitely think like your doctor can be a good touch point. But I think also you want to find that doctor that like partners with.
I don't even think it's the doctor. I think it's a personal responsibility.
Well, yes. Number one, it's a personal responsibility because at the end of the day, your doctor, like, I mean, they have a stake in whether you live or you die. But like they don't care how you feel, you know, it like every day. They're not there with you. They're not the ones picking out your food and your, you know, for lunch and dinner. And they're not the ones doing all, you know. Living your life, you're the one living your life. You have to take personal responsibility. But, you know, I think it's also can be said that to find that doctor that you think partners with you, that supports you, that is there to be a touch point for.
I know this about myself. I can't speak for anybody else. I know this about myself that if my doctors had said from the very beginning, this is going to entail major lifestyle changes on your part.
Would you
would have done it.
Interesting.
Because I was the person that was like, tell me what to do. I will do anything that you tell me what to do. It wasn't even a conversation.
And when you're traumatized, those words mean so much more. Like when you're I'm in this place where I'm soaking up what the point of authority is telling me because I don't even know how to make decisions for myself.
And you feel
powerless.
But
when they say, oh, don't do anything. Or when they say like, go have a milkshake because you're losing too much weight. Like you just go do it because like, it just feels right. Someone else is telling you to do it and they've given you permission to do it.
Yeah.
But if somebody gave you permission and somebody who you saw as an authority was like, I need you to, you know, consider how you're eating, how much you're eating, like when you're eating, and I need you to consider like what you're eating.
Well, and
it would mean something different.
Here's the other thing too that I think is important to note is that, you know, this was news to me when I found out about this however long ago. It's like, you know that you can have metabolically healthy obese people who will never get sick in their lifetimes. They will outlive us all because metabolically they're healthy. They just have a lot of subcutaneous fat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got thin people who look healthy, who are just a hot mess on the inside.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder sometimes, do doctors only look at these metrics like, you know,
like weight and height and like the BMI?
You know what I mean? Like, and these other comorbidities and think that the education piece doesn't need to happen with people who otherwise look healthy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can definitely say that that is true because when I walked in, you know, when I was diagnosed, I was working out, like I was going to Orange Theory and I was pregnant and I was pregnant and also still working out. And on paper, it looked like I ate healthy, but my stress was all over the place. And I would say that my mental health was very challenged. And I, you know, like,
you think your mental health was challenged?
It was challenged, but in a way that I was like, oh, I've got it all together. And so like, I remember my oncologist even be like, you're going to skate through chemo. Like, it's going to be easy because you are healthy.
Yeah.
I look back, I'm like, how healthy was I?
I
got cancer.
No, and that's exactly how I feel. They said to me, you're not our typical patient. You're going to do great. And I'm thinking, okay. At the time, I really clung to that. I was like, great. I'm in better shape.
Yeah.
No, I look back, same thing. I had horrific stress management techniques.
Yeah. I was overdoing it, saying yes to everything.
Oh, it was terrible. There were so many things I was doing that I thought were good that were not good.
Yeah.
Now, is that your medical doctor is there to like treat the disease and not necessarily, to your point, like coach you up. They don't have the time for that.
Yeah.
So that again goes back to the personal responsibility piece. But I do think that the doctors need to do a better job of looking a patient in the eye and saying, you didn't get cancer out of nowhere. This happened because your body's yelling
it's
at you.
It's giving you a sign.
It's giving you a sign that something's not right. This is not working for you.
Yeah.
So you have to make drastic changes.
Yeah.
But traumatized individuals, you know, there's lots of reasons why somebody who's traumatized doesn't make a change. They may come to believe that they have no control over their situation, mm-hmm. no matter what actions they take. Mm-hmm. This can be reinforced by doctors, to your point, like
saying you're unlucky that you got this
diagnosis. Yeah. There's no reason. You know, we don't know what caused this. There's nothing you did to contribute to it.
Yeah. Which is not true. Like you can't pinpoint why somebody got cancer, because there could be multitude of reasons.
Sure.
But yeah.
So helplessness, a feeling of helplessness, fear and anxiety. I mean, when you have fear and anxiety, which everybody does, you can get paralyzed by the decisions. And I think that's what happened to me. I think I literally just followed instructions and was paralyzed for a good 6 years. Mm-hmm. You know, just trying to regain my old life mm-hmm. and trying to just put the pieces back together. Mm-hmm. I wasn't focused on living an enhanced life. Mm-hmm. I was still focused on trying to get my old life back. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's where my headspace has changed over time. It's like, there's no going back to that. Yeah. You know, and do I want to? That's what got me sick.
Yeah.
And I think when you start looking at it from that perspective, like this is an opportunity to start over regardless mm-hmm. of your prognosis.
And that's going to happen on your own timing, because mm-hmm. I was in the middle of chemo and I remember the first move I made, I called one of my friends who I was seeing on Facebook and was like, hey, I see that you're out there like hawking this clean makeup. I need to have a conversation with you because I'm in the middle of chemo and something's not right. You know, like,
yeah, well, you were.
But
really...
that was me clinging to what I can not control so many things right now, but I can control this.
Right.
And it gave me a little bit of my power back. Mm-hmm. And then that snowballed into, well, I'm going to look into my household cleaners. And then it snowballed into, you know, listening to things about organic food, you know, like it just sort of snowballed into it. And it was a slow boil, but it gave me something to focus on that made me better, you know? So anyway, everybody's going to be different is my point.
Everybody is going to be different and they're going to get there differently. But I do wish that somebody had lit a fire under me way earlier than me trying to find it on my own 6 years after diagnosis.
Yeah.
So I will say this, if you're listening to this and you're questioning like, should I be eating this way? Should I be doing this stress-wise? The answer is, if you're questioning it, you probably need to make some changes. And...
Or read about it. Like, you don't have to make the change right away. Sometimes the first thing is just to educate yourself. And then the change sort of just naturally starts to happen.
And changes are small. They're cumulative over time. It's not like you have to make a billion changes at once.
No. Yeah.
Low self-esteem and self-worth. I mean, trauma often erodes a person's self-esteem and a sense of worthiness. So like, if they don't feel like they deserve better circumstances or are not capable of achieving them, it can kind of paralyze them from making steps. Uh-huh. And then you add to it, like a lot of these women are having disfiguring surgeries. Mm-hmm. And it's like, or your sex life suffers, or you feel like you've prematurely aged because of treatment and now you feel bad about yourself.
Yeah.
Your self-esteem can really, it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. I feel gross. I'm just going to give up.
That takes you into really like the next 2 points you have, which is depression and dissociation and avoidance. Because I literally was just talking to the survivor last week and she was like, after surgery, I didn't feel or look like myself, which just made me want to stay in. And like, I stopped sort of hanging out with my friends who were kind of invalidating my experience and saying like, well, why can't you just, you know, like I've seen other people like go through breast cancer and then get back to life. And then it just sort of like keeps continuing to knock you down the ladder and, mm-hmm. and you start not doing things that you once did or once enjoyed, which then you're like, well, why even get out of bed? And you like the thought pattern just starts. So, you know,
and depression, people, you know, trauma leads to depression and that is like hopelessness, fatigue, lack of energy. How many times do we hear women say, I have no energy?
All the time.
And I often wonder how much of that is tied to your mental health.
Yeah. Or just continuing that pattern of like, I can do it all.
Yeah. Lack of support. Traumatized people might isolate themselves if they don't mm-hmm. have a lack of supportive network, which you just kind of touched on. If your friends don't get it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we see people all the time that have had breast cancer and they're doing great. Sarah and I were talking about this offline yesterday after she told me this story. I was like, it's so funny because they're not doing great.
No,
they're not doing great. Can't have cancer and go through all that and then just be right as rain. And and for people to assume that.
Well, and maybe they processed, but they processed differently. Like they processed out away from their friends, or they were seeing a really great counselor, or they've got a really great spousal support at home, or they've got other friends who they've
People just don't air their dirty laundry.
Yeah.
If you're still struggling several years after your diagnosis, you're not telling all your friends that. I mean, most people
I am, but
you are. Most people are not. I mean, I would probably disclose it to my nearest and dearest. But I mean, you know, people just don't realize that is not, you know, the minute you're done.
Yeah.
Everything's right as right.
And maybe you are doing great, but it's because you've done the work.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. I mean, guys, it takes intentional work.
Yeah.
There is no way around it. It is not going to just happen. It's like what I tell my son. You're not going to magically get good grades without doing the work.
Like, gosh, like, I wish.
Yeah. I mean, you're not that smart, dude. You're going to have to put the work in. You didn't get that gene
for me.
You
weren't born, you know, Sheldon.
Right. So economic, emotional, or practical constraints. I see this a lot with survivors. Practical issues, right? So we, oh my gosh, we had this woman come through. I might talk about her on a different episode, but she had like six jobs. Uh-huh. She was the sole provider. She was doing everything for her family. And Sarah and I were both like, she needs to step back. She needs to hang up some of this and focus on her healing. And what she said was, I can't. Yeah. Everybody's depending on me. I'm the sole breadwinner. I can't do it. And
there is only so long you can carry that load.
You cannot do it. And when you get ill like this, you have to tell people, I'm sorry. I need you to be there for me. I cannot do this anymore. And she won't. I don't know that she'll do it because she feels like she has this obligation. And it's like, so, you know, sometimes people will say, you know, they're desperate and desperate need to take time off work and they can't do it. Mm-hmm. They literally cannot do it. Mm-hmm. And so practical restraints can really keep people from kind of addressing their health issues, like because they have to do it to support their family.
Yeah.
Same thing with affording healthy food.
Yeah.
Healthy food costs more, you know, a lot of times. And so if you're in a store and it's a matter of getting the boxed food versus the healthy food, sometimes it's just purely economical.
Yeah.
Although I will argue, and this might be controversial, that when there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on how much do you care about this.
Yeah. I mean, the way I always thought about it is you're going to pay for it at one point or another.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, or lack of alternatives. So let's talk about toxic family, because a lot of people, we see this with survivors too, have toxic family members. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult for them to distance themselves from them. Mm-hmm. It can be really difficult to heal if you're surrounded by toxic family or friends.
Yeah.
And so these are all things that we think hold people back from making the decisions that they need to really advocate for themselves. Yep. And I mean, anything to add to that? Do you agree?
I think what would be really great. Well, let's go to a second sponsor and then let's talk about like
the intention is.
Point of this series.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
All right, we're back. So what's the goal of this series, Sarah? Because I think you and I want to take a different approach.
Right. So this series is not going to be about like, here's what you eat and here's how you do it. And like, you know, like obviously we don't have the answer. Gosh, that would be nice if we had the answer. But this is going to be about sort of all the hidden things, the things that we've noticed about the patients that we've seen, the survivors that we've seen, and the mental and emotional aspects of like how work is affecting you and boundaries with your families and blood sugar. We are going to talk about blood sugar. So we're going to talk a little bit about food.
I mean, it's real life stuff that, I mean, it's just real life stuff. It's not, it's impacting your cancer diagnosis, but it's like things that everybody should be doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the series. We're kicking it off today. Until next time, guys.
See ya.
Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.